Welcome to the Author Show with Mackenzie Stewart and Amy Shannon.
We have over 15 years of literary experience between us. Our mission is to educate and assist authors of all writing levels.
Hello, Amy. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Hey, I am doing well. I'm being entertained in a show that I just discovered. I think it's new. I just discovered. And it's called Lucky Hank. Have you seen that? I've been telling everybody about it. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
So it takes place at a university, a small town, mm-hmm. And it's a general studies, you know, department, more specifically a writing department, right? So Hank is the chair of this writing department. And so Hank is having this writing workshop. And no one else probably thinks that this is funny. But I was like laughing and holding my side when I was watching it, because so he was hosting a writing workshop. And so the student was reading his paper, uh-huh. And it was horrible. It was horrible. So and the reason why I can identify with what was happening is because that was my first draft. But I thought I was finished, right? Because I told my story, right? And so this kid was just like that too. So I can identify with what he was doing. And so it was clearly a first draft, you know, yeah. But he was thinking he was done, and he thought that he had like some work that was going to be winning some prizes, right? So he was reading it, and he was telling the story. Like he was telling, this person did this, this person did that, this person, and it was just really horrible, right? So that was him telling the story. Then not only did he do that, he told what everybody was thinking when they were doing all the stuff, right? Which made it even worse, right? So it was so funny and hilarious because I saw me in that student. But his was just a bit more over the top than mine. But I could identify the writing, because that's something that I was doing when I first started telling my story. And the funny part about it is the person who, you know, I reluctantly gave my first manuscript to, I gave it to her to read. And I gave it to her because she's a good, she gives feedback very well. It not from a point where it's hurtful.
Right.
And so, and it, you know how it is, we don't even want to give it to anybody. So I say reluctantly, because you don't want to give it to anybody. And so she read it and she told me to stop writing. And for me to, she says, I'm telling the story. And I was like, yeah, of course I'm telling the story. Right. And she was like, no, no. And so she was trying to explain it to me, and I didn't get it. Like, I totally did not get it. And then so she told me to pause and for me to pick up a couple books for me to read so I can understand how to, and I'm using air quotes here, to tell a story in a way that make people feel the story, right? And so that was really great feedback for me. So let me go back to Lucky Hank. So Hank is looking out the window, right? When the student's reading, he's looking out the window. He's not saying anything. And then he turns, the student is finished, and he goes, does anybody have any feedback, you know, for him? And they're like, that's your job. And so the students just kept pressuring him. And so he finally said, okay. So he pointed out all of the things, and it was like a lot of things, right? It was you're telling the story. Then not only you're telling the story, you're telling us what people are thinking. And he goes, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, right.
It was just kind of weird, because how can one person know what the other person's thinking? But you're telling it, but you're telling it in a way that you're telling it out loud. So he pointed out all the things, and so that's the thing that made it really hilarious. So the students in the class or in the workshop, they were like looking like, basically, why are you being so mean? And so he's like, y'all asked me to give feedback, like what? And so he could have done it differently, right? So he could have done it differently, so it wasn't hurtful. So there's always one in the group, and I like how this was written. It's always one that's in the group that is highly optimistic, right? So when they were asking, well, how was it? So before the teacher weighed in on the writing, oh, it was great, right? So every time when you see him giving feedback or in a situation, everything is great, everything is wonderful. I don't think he needs to change a thing. So he always shows up in that way. And so, you know, I really wanted to kind of highlight this because we were talking about writing workshops, right? Writing groups. And so this struck me as very funny because I think you do get that person, right? The person who's so optimistic, his writing was horrible too. And it was horrible. And so the kid, so I think I'm old enough to call him a kid. He's a college student. So I'm of that age that everybody are kids, right?
Yeah.
So he tells his parents, and his parents come to the school and they want to fire the guy.
Oh man, because they told him the truth. That's terrible.
Right. And that goes back again to people. So let me make sure before I even say this, let me make sure I say something. Mm-hmm. We definitely want to make sure that you're giving constructive feedback, right? And we want to make sure we do it in a way, so people can hear it, right? And yeah. So because if you attack somebody, they don't hear it, right? They just feel the attacks, right? So I just want to make sure that that we I put that out there.
Oh, definitely. Now, I mean, there are ways to give feedback, even if it's negative feedback, but in a way that is not detrimental but helpful.
Right. And so this became detrimental feedback because the kid never came back to the writing workshop. His parents came to the dean and wanted to get him fired, right? Now, yes, I can agree that he should have done things differently. However, we as writers, I think we need to have thick skin, right?
Yeah.
Because every person who reads your work, they're not going to like it. They're gonna read it and they're like, oh, this book is horrible. Well, they're saying the book is horrible because they don't read that genre and they didn't even look and see what genre the book was in, right? So of course it's horrible to them, right? So I think that we there's definitely a way that for us to give feedback, but I also think that everything that we put down on paper may not be good, right? So he had to get some reinforcement. He had to get his parents involved. And I think that was, to me, that was a lot. Like, and so I think that you, we're in a place, we're in a society that people think that everything that they're doing is fine. And there's no ownership.
Right, or accountability.
Exactly. So the teacher did not give the feedback in the right way. Okay, but the student did get feedback. And so what an inspiring story this would have been. So A, he did not bring his parents in trying to get somebody fired. Maybe the inspiring story is that, you know what, I got this really rough feedback, you know what, and this made me such a better writer. And I want to give, you know, Hank, some kudos. I wasn't really trying to hear it or receive it at that particular time. He could have done it differently. But that made me a stronger writer. I think that it was wrong, and I know you're gonna check it out, right? Because the way I'm describing everything, I'm gonna check it out. It was wrong. However, feedback is feedback, and I think that it's definitely something for all of us to take in. Now Hank. He was writing a book with somebody years ago. So the story is starting to unfold. He wrote a book with someone years ago or started to write a book. And then the guy got famous Hank didn't, and Hank ended up teaching, right? So so there's a lot of backstory to Hank and this writing thing. And so I'm journeying with Hank through this story, trying to figure out and uncover what it is. And so I bring that up because that's what writing is about, right? I'm staying tuned to see and figure out what's happening in the backstory and some of that other stuff that brought Hank to be where he is. He's hostile. He's in the small town. When he gave feedback, I think the students were recording it. When he gave feedback, he said that the college was an underrated college, second best to a community college. it was horrible. Like,
oh,
it was,
man.
They put it in the newspaper. The newspaper. And so his phone was like blowing up in the middle of the night because, you know, all these people were, criticizing him. He got all these text messages, and the other funny thing, and I'm gonna get off of this kick with Lucky Hank. So the kid was at his So the next morning, the kid was sitting in front of his door and he said, "Hey, I'm here to hear your apology." That's what he told him. He said, "I'm here to hear your apology." And so Hank just kind of reeled it to him again. The student was leaning against his door. He unlocked his door and the student fell down. And so it was, he was like, "I'm not apologizing." So anyway. I thought it was very funny because I identified with the writer and what he was doing. And I immediately knew that it was very, very poor writing. And then it was funny because, you know, as I said, I too was doing all those things, but he went a little further. And kudos to the person who wrote what he was reading out aloud, right? And made it into a travesty.
I love it when we can relate to, you know, if we're reading something or watching something, and it's so interesting on we talk about that a lot, giving feedback, and then you can remember when, you know, at some point every writer has had that one person who lied and said it was great when it wasn't, or you've had that one person that says, "You know what? This totally blows," and you know, and there's got to be something, you know, it's got to be truthful without being hurtful, and that's mm-hmm. how I look at as feedback. Mm-hmm. I have had authors send me their first drafts. And said, "Okay, I'm ready to go. You want to review it for me?" Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. I'm gonna have to check that out.
yeah, you're gonna have to check it out. We have to, you know, talk about it. But you know what, Amy, I'm at the point right now with my writing, and I know everybody isn't, but I am. I'm just speaking for me. I'm at the point with my writing. The niceties, yeah, that's fine, but this doesn't make sense. So I need you to say, "Hey, this doesn't come across the way I think that you're intending it." Oh, okay, it doesn't. Okay, so I need somebody to give it to me straight, because as you just said, you just have people, you know, saying really nice things, and then you have a book that doesn't read well. Yeah. And I'm to the point where it's like, just tell me. Just tell me what the feedback is, because, you know, we're all trying to build an audience base. And if the book doesn't sit well, it lands flat, then we're not growing as authors, and we're not growing as writers, just period. Being able to connect people to what we're trying to say. And that's the whole communication piece. So I think that's going to be something that's very important for us to understand.
Yeah, I mean, it really is that important. I mean, even before you send your book to an editor, you know, you should clean up your book as much as possible. Otherwise, the editor, when they make all the changes that's wrong with it, it's them writing the book and not you. So that's something that's important as well. I've had people send me their first draft for editing, and it's like, why don't you clean it up a little bit better? And then otherwise, you don't want me to write the story, because then it's my story, not yours. So, that's something that is really important. Know how to self-edit. There are things that you can do to clean up your work, see how it reads. Read it out loud to yourself before you read it out loud in the middle of a classroom. read it, see how it sounds, how it reads. Because when you say it out loud, you're making yourself read every single word.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times when you're reading, you kind of like, you overlook certain things. Because it processes in your brain of what's being said. And, it's like when, Microsoft guesses what your next phrase is going to be based on your writing. That's kind of what we do when we read. And if you say it out loud, you have to say every single word. And I do that myself once I get through the first couple drafts, just to see how it reads, especially with conversations you're having. How many times do you have a conversation that you constantly call the person you're talking to by their name? I mean, if you and I were sitting down having a conversation, or even when we talk on the phone, I mean, you don't constantly call me Amy and then say something, then say Amy and then say something, and vice versa. That's not, you might say their name to get attention or whatever you call them, but it's like text who you're texting. And if you're texting one person, why would you need to say, "Hi, Amy"?
I know, right? Exactly. Oh, goodness. Yeah. So that's what I've been doing. I've been watching TV, and so it resonated with me just because of our conversations about writing groups. And to really expand on this just a little more, I think that before you start a writing group, or I'm saying you, meaning our audience,
yeah,
I think it's going to be important for you to lay out the ground rules. Mm-hmm. So that people understand the culture that you're trying to build, and also to make sure that it's a safe space for people to be able to talk about their work, for them to be able to critique the work of others. And so you definitely want to make sure. And then it's also, once the person is in the group, you understand everybody's personality.
Yeah.
And then if I say certain things to so-and-so, she's going to cry or he's going to cry. but again, I'll go back to, if we're wanting to get feedback, you're going to have thick skin. Right. And I say that from the writing perspective, and also from the place of employment, right? So you're at work and then you're asking somebody for feedback. And so when they give it to you, you don't like it, but you ask them for it.
Right, exactly. And you have to agree with what they say, because that's their opinion, but you should listen to what they are saying and then make your, if you're going to make changes or you're not. I mean, maybe your writing is good and the person, that you asked to read it, there could be many reasons why they think there's something wrong with it or that they don't like it. And it could have nothing to do with the story or the way it's written. So you kind of need to really listen when someone is giving you feedback or critique. It's like those people that, and I don't mean that in a bad way when I say those people, but the people that will go on Amazon, they'll find books that are in a genre that they don't believe in or they don't like, and then they'll write reviews about that particular book just because, and they've never read it, but they just don't like it because of its content. You know, maybe it's about serial killers, maybe it's erotica, and they don't read that type of work. So they're going to say, oh, it's bad, blah, blah, blah. You know, so there are, it's also can go back to knowing who you should say, or should ask or shouldn't ask, to critique your work, depending on, you know, like you said, in a writing group, you'll know different personalities. And, you know, if you tell, say, Jane Doe, that her, you know, she overused a word or something, she might cry and break down and say, oh, I'm never going to do this again, and then run away. But, you know, there are, you know, it's like when you're writing, you know who your target audience is, but also know who you can ask for truthful or honest feedback based on their opinion, and listen to what they have to say, because that in itself is part of the art. And, you know, if they say, what's your book about? You should know what your book about is about. You should know what genre or subgenres that it may fit in, because that's really important too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's important. I think it's all important. You know, those things that we're trying to do, but it's just I think the feedback part is really tricky for everybody, and I think that it's just going to be important for people to you have to pick and choose, and then you have to show up in a way that, again, you're not going to break down. because it is disappointing, right? When you get, you know, when you get the feedback from the editor, right? And you've misused a word like 50 times, and you're thinking, man, well, me, it's like, man, I didn't catch that. Like, you know, so that's me. And I don't know. I just think that if we're asking for feedback, you know, no matter how someone gives it, you're gonna have to filter through it and pick and choose what you're going to do.
Yeah, definitely. That's definitely true.
You're gonna pick and choose, but here's the other part. You know, Mackenzie is, you know, yeah, this feedback is just, yeah, I'm just not gonna pay any attention to it. But if Amy Shannon is giving that same feedback, and then Jane Doe is giving the same feedback, and so on and so forth, then there seems to be people that are giving you feedback that you need to take.
Yeah, exactly.
But the thing also about it is, Amy, you know, we're not, a lot of writers aren't in writing groups. And so we're just using the feedback from, you know, a friend who doesn't want to hurt our feelings. Or a friend who doesn't even want to read it, right? Yeah. Or a family member. And so, you know, it's you have to kind of figure that out.
That's true. Yeah. And something that, you know, we had talked about on previous shows about, you know, writing groups is keeping them small, whether they're virtual or they're, mm-hmm. someone's home, in a library, get to know the people that are in your writing group. I think we had heard from authors before say that they're in writing groups where the other people write in different genres, and that can make it for it's a more interesting conversation about the work. And, you know, they know, you know, it takes time to be able to trust that person. You know, you kind of got to get to know these people in your group. And it doesn't matter if it's in person or it's virtual. With virtual, the one thing that I think someone had mentioned before on our show said that, you know, there's that anonymity of, you know, when you're writing about someone or something, and you're typing it, say, on social media or in an email, you get braver than if you would say it to their face. So,
right,
you know, that's important to know, especially if you're in a virtual writing group. You know, and people can create these through, they could create them through, you know, Zoom, or, you know, it could be video, it could be audio, it could just be, say, a social media group, where people share their thing, their information, their work. I was in one a few years ago, with, it was me and three other writers. Two of the writers I am still in contact with, just kind of like, we're not doing the same thing, but, you know, I'm like, if I need something honest, then I could say, hey, so-and-so, can you tell me what you think about this? and get honest feedback. And when they do write, I, you know, they send me, you know, their work for reviews. And some authors, I've been the only one, only reviewer, I should say, that I've read like all of particular authors' books, because they always send them to me. You know, they may get other reviews and other reviewers, but I might be the only one that's read all of them. And because of that, they know what kind of feedback, what kind of reviews I'm going to write, you know. And it comes down to knowing, you know, if someone's going to be honest and truthful, no matter how they're providing the feedback.
Yeah, that's so important. That is definitely so important. Well, all right. Well, Amy, I think we've had another great show. I think that I want all of our listeners who are writers, please go and find a writing group that you can participate in, and let us know how it goes. We definitely want to know how it goes. I think I would like to see more writing groups. I wouldn't mind seeing a directory, right, of writing groups, and something that's not on Meetup, right? So just a whole directory of writing groups that people can select. And I would like to see like genre specific writing groups, right? To really get down in the weeds of helping people and supporting people in genre specific type of writing. So I think that should be next on the horizon. What do you think, Amy?
Oh, definitely, because I was just thinking about this project that I'm working on. I finished my fiction short story, but I'm trying to gather information and write this nonfiction historical book. And when I'm doing it piecemeal, putting all this information in, and the one thing I need is, I might reach out to someone that has written a nonfiction history book, because I don't want my book to feel like it's a textbook, you know? So, you know, that's something that once I put stuff together that I will definitely reach. I know people who have written these types of at least historical, truthful fiction or nonfiction books. And I would definitely be reaching out to them to ask them certain questions or read what they've written so I can kind of get an idea. But I mean, I'm in the early stages of just gathering information, but that's something that I will definitely do myself. I mean, this is the first time I'm writing a historical nonfiction book, and it's about my hometown. So I will definitely reach out and ask questions. Even you and I, you know, when we're doing something new, we look for people that have experience with something, and then we ask them questions. So Thank you very much.
So I have some really fantastic news.
Please share.
Yes. So I've been going through this professional development, and I definitely encourage everyone to read this book. It's called Designing Your Life by Bill Burnett. And it's making sure you are living your purpose and really figuring out what that purpose is. And the book is based off of these 5 steps to designing your life you want. And he first started in a design lab at Stanford. So basically he was teaching this class to help students figure out what you want to do when you grow up, right? And so having that particular conversation. And he put it in the context of thinking about how designers think. And it's basically a culture mindset of reframing, radical collaboration, curiosity, the mindful process, and bias towards action. And, you know, the very first question, you know, when you are thinking about life, you know, you have work and then you have your personal life. And then you choose which area you want to design and you think about it. And, you know, why are you? Because when you start thinking about work and then you start thinking about personal. So for me, when I said, why was I stuck? So I saw that this was available for me to participate in. And I kind of felt like, you know, my work life was not being, I wasn't reaching my full potential. And so with that, even before I even took the class, I read an excerpt of what the book was about. I started thinking, because I did feel stuck, right? Because if you feel like you're not living up to your full potential, then, you know, you ask the question, why? And then I decided to apply for a position within the company that I work. And so I was promoted. So now for work, I feel like I am doing the thing. But in my personal life, I felt like I was stuck. And so I identified a couple things that I felt, you know, that I'm stuck in or with, and that's my writing. And because when we start thinking about, you know, so we went through several exercises where we had to figure out, you know, what the thing is that we felt like we wanted to, and I'm gonna use the word unstick. Okay. So I identified that. And then started really doing the work. So there's work that we have to do before each of the sessions. And so one of the things that we had to look at is basically, what is your passion? And the thing about it is 20% of us, so less than 20% of us, have a passion. We are going on our daily lives without a passion. So we are just living life. We're not, we don't have a very specific target and without a passion. So that's something there.
Right.
The second was, this is the thing that really got me, was you should know where you're going. If you don't, you're late. Right. So that was something that that struck me as like, huh, right? If you don't know where you're going, you're late. And you hear it all the time, Amy, when it shows up. Maybe I should say it this way, it shows up, right? When you meet someone and they're just, so maybe they're in their 40s or maybe they're in their 50s and they're just starting to really focus on life, right? Maybe they've kind of, you know, just kind of not really done a whole lot, but now they're really focused on life. And so it's like, yeah, this person is a little late trying to get their act together. So say it that way, to get their act together.
Well, I also found, and this, I don't know if this is reflected, is that some people, they do have, say, a passion or a natural talent, but they put it aside because they have to have a job, they've got bills to pay or whatever. And, you know, and it could be, I see it a lot of times with writers or people who want to write, or artists, you know, whether they're a painter, a sculptor. And I hate to see that kind of talent go to waste. And it's something they're passionate about, but they decide, you know, they don't think that they can do that and live the life and pay their bills and all of that. When sometimes it just means better time management. You know, if you wake up, you know, maybe an hour before you go to work and you decide that, well, I'm going to write or I'm going to draw or sculpt, just, you know, just to get that in and start the day. I'm not saying you have to do that. You know, you could do it whatever time that would fit in. But I always hate it when others, they let their natural talents go to waste. I mean, they're there. I mean, yes, they want to do other things, and they have other interests. But when they, you know, it's just something I find it sad.
Well, that's it, right? So they're stuck.
Yeah.
So you're gonna
hear
me say that word? They're stuck. And so, you know, it's trying to figure out. And you gave a really great example, you know, of something that people could try, but it's so doing the work, and it's really, really, to be honest with you, it's the work that I'm doing with this is really convincing you that you need to be doing it and you need to find time for it, right? So one of the things that, one of the activities that we have to do is called a good time journal. And it was very sad because you had to, there's two different, so there's on the left side, there's just lines for you to kind of break down your week, you know, Monday through Sunday there. And then there's also a gas tank, you know, gauge, right? A fuel gauge, right? And so one was engagement and then the other is energy, right? And so you go through your calendar and you look at the things that you're doing. So you look at your calendar and you figure out all the things that you're doing. And then do those things give you high energy or low energy? And then, and that's in the engagement part. And then the second fuel gauge is, so what gives you energy? Was it positive energy or was it negative energy? And as I went through my calendar, you know, yes, you know, there's work that you have to do during the day. Yes, you know, there's meetings, there's, you know, just, you know, all one after the other. So of course, that's, you know, so that's part of the job. But also it's like, I'm working all day. What am I doing to bring me energy? So on that night, I went to the gym, right? So how did I feel as far as my energy? It was positive energy because I was focused. I was excited because the gym was at my on my calendar for, you know, to round out my day. So I was focused because I know if I can get through the day, I can go to the gym and do the things that I really want to do. So it really made me happy. So, but then when you start looking at your schedule and all of the things that you do, especially on the weekends, you know, and you're doing everything for other people, that was really like the sad part. It's like, I'm not doing anything for myself, right? I'm going, going, going. And so normally on a Saturday, I would be able to, you know, set aside some time to write, and or Saturday or Sunday. And the thing that I noticed was from the time that I got up in the morning till like 6 o'clock at night, I was doing something. I was that one Saturday that I wrote about in my journal. I had to go to the farmer's market because I had to look for certain shrubs because the guy was coming to put the shrubs in the backyard. I had to go. I mean, I had like two appointments that day. I was like on the go all day. And when I started describing how I felt, I actually have here in capital letters, no writing. I felt frustrated and I felt that I was not focused.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I guess so, it seems like you kind of, like, I remember when I hit 40, I was kind of like looking at my, you know, looking back at my life, and I knew that obviously as you grow up, you change. But then, you know, I was looking at life in a different way, and what I wanted to do, and, you know, what I wanted to accomplish. And then I felt I had a different purpose. And then when my boys became adults, now then I was being a parent to an adult, and that's not the easiest. It's like a strange transition. Like, you're still their parent, but you're not like wiping their noses or licking your thumb to wipe something off their face or whatever. And then as I hit, you know, half a century, but these last 10 years, I've seen, you know, well, I've had a lot of problems, but physical and mental health problems, but I also see that there is still things that I love to do. I still have a passion for writing, and I can, there are days that I just feel stuck, and then there are days that at least on Sundays, this was my son actually told me to do this, is at least take a Sunday off to just relax and kind of, you know, recharge your batteries or whatever. And it's not always easy, but because you think of all the million things, oh, I got to do this, this, and this. So do you think from looking at your life now and then looking at it, say the last 10 years, that there were times that you were stuck and you just didn't know what to do?
I don't know. I don't know. I guess that's like the big conceptual view of it. But I think if, you know, I'm kind of looking at, you know, when you drill down on it. So I don't think that I was stuck, right? So, so to say, but I think that when I look at what I'm trying to get my focus to be, is the writing part that I'm not doing on a consistent basis, because, you know, part of what I shared was with the group was I want to write more. And so I think that's always been a, you know, after I discovered that I could write something and something coherent and it makes sense, that me trying to do it on a regular basis, I think that's the stuck part, right? Because I'm not. And that has been something that's been going on for a while. And I want to transition that to be a little bit more prominent in my life. So I don't think me in general being stuck, but I think it has all to do with the writing.
Yeah, like you're not you feel like you're not doing enough of it, or you've had to put it aside because of real life?
Well, I am not making it prominent, right? So I'm not making it prominent, and that's definitely part of my long-term goals, is to be a James Patterson, right? But I have to write enough, right? So and promote it enough to really get the work out there. One of the things that really resonated with me, there's a couple points with doing this work, designing life. What you believe, who you are, what you do, you will experience life as meaningful. So when you connect it all together, so there is no work and then there is no separate life, right? Those things have to merge, and we have to be able to do it in a way that is going to bring us some happiness, right? So in the journal, I'm looking at that. And so it's like, you know, it's coming together with the whole gym, but then the writing part needs to be placed in that as well. The thing that really, another thing that really resonated with me is we all have a gravity problem. And so I love this in doing the work. You can't solve a problem you're not willing to have. That resonated with me. You can't solve a problem you're not willing to have. This is a circumstance and you have to accept it, right? So so think about relationships. When people are, you know, they don't want to admit that it's dysfunctional, right? So you can't solve a problem that you're not willing to have. So you're not owning it. So then you need to accept it, right? Because I think that's where problems occur. We don't want to say the problem out loud, but yet we still want to complain about it. You can't have it both ways to be happy. So you need to accept it as a circumstance in my life, and you need to be able to move on. So sometimes people get stuck that way, right? Mm-hmm. So that right there resonated with me. I thought about some friends, some things that's happening in their life, and they're saying they're miserable, but they're not willing to accept that as a problem and to do something about it.
I can resonate with that.
If they're not doing anything about it, you need to accept it and move on. And to me, it resonated because having that attitude brings you peace, right?
Yeah.
Because everything isn't a problem, right? Everything isn't a problem, and you've accepted it, right? And I think that has a lot to do with ownership, right? People being self-aware and owning it.
Yeah. No, I get that. It's like it's kind of like there are people in your lives that, you know, it doesn't matter, family, friends, or whatever, there may be a part of them, or just that you just realize what kind of person they are, and you know that anything this person does is going to annoy you, or make you, and it could have nothing to do with you at all, but you just know because of this person, how they are, that it's going to make you feel a certain way towards them. And then they do it, and then you're still like annoyed. Like, I know this, I have this one person in my life, and whatever they do or say is going to annoy me, or just kind of make me, you know, mad at them. And I'm glad that I've been distancing myself. And then they do something that does that, and I still allow that to affect me and make me annoyed or mad.
Mm-hmm. I loved that. You can't solve a problem you're not willing. Like that struck my core. Sometimes we put up with things, as your example, sometimes we put up with things, but until we raise it to the level of, you know what, this is a problem. I'm gonna do something about it. If you're not gonna do anything about it, then you have to accept it, right? And
Yeah.
then you have to be able to move on. Because if not, you're gonna get stuck, right? You're gonna get stuck in being upset about this, this situation, this pro, you're gonna get stuck. So that just really resonated with me a lot in that. Then the next one was in the second part of that, accept, empathize, define, ideate, prototype, and you need to test it, and then you need to definitely move on, right? From it.
Right.
So I think that's something for us to kind of really resonate on and really so I'm using what I'm learning. I have accountability partners with that. I've reached out to people in my group to offer some its assistance and guidance in how I move forward. So I'm just very excited about the process. So the book is called Designing Your Life.
Well, that's something I'm definitely gonna take a look into, because obviously it's helping you. It's making you look at your life and finding your own purpose. And sometimes it's like you got promoted and. Then you feel like okay, you're where you want to be at this time in your professional life, but then there's some things in your personal life that you just want to not be stuck at some point. You see what you may be neglecting. That's something that's it's part of you. Your writing is part of you. It's you write very well and you have stories in your head that you want to get out on paper, and it's not so easy, but I think that maybe this process is worth for others to look into as well. Maybe before you hit that point where you feel stuck.
Yes. So I definitely recommend Designing Your Life. Thank you for listening to the after show. I'm Mackenzie Stewart.
And I'm Amy Shannon. Anything that you need to know about us is on our website, wetheaftershow.wixsite.com/home.
Join us again next time.
See you
Thanks.
next time.
Bye-bye.